Don't get left out in the doghouse. It's Mike here, host of Noise of Carpet. Even though Fund Drive is over, you can still donate now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573 and be radio's best friend.
Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
One of the things that we pointed out in all of these so-called battleground states and even in the South, that many of these states are not red or blue as much as they are untapped and unorganized. Trump won in by 74,000 votes in the last election, but there were over 1 million poor and low-wage voters that did not vote.
As Donald Trump wins the presidency and Republicans take the Senate and probably the House, where did the Democrats go wrong? We'll speak with Bishop William Barber, head of the Poor People's Campaign, co-author of White Poverty, How Exposing Myths About Race and Class Can Reconstruct American Democracy. We'll also talk with former Bernie Sanders advisor David Sirota, editor-in-chief of The Lever, about Election 2024, how billionaire Avengers destroyed democracy. Then to Gaza.
Even here, we have to wait 2.5 hours. By now, it could be much longer to go to the next checkpoint where there are Israeli forces, to go to their second checkpoint to get to the north. Symbol of how difficult it is to do any principled aid work for the long-suffering civilian population here in Gaza.
We'll speak with Jan Egeland, Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, who's just left Gaza, as UNICEF describes the conditions in northern Gaza as apocalyptic. They say that northern Gaza is on the verge of death. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Donald Trump has named Florida Republican operative Susie Wiles as White House Chief of Staff for his incoming administration. She will become the first female Chief of Staff in U.S. history. Wiles led Trump's 2024 presidential campaign and previously his Florida operations in 2016. She also worked on the gubernatorial campaign of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Overnight, several news outlets projected Trump would win the state of Nevada, expanding his victory to 301 Electoral College votes. Trump's leading in Arizona, making it likely he'll complete a sweep of battleground states. Control over the House of Representatives remains unresolved, with more than two dozen House races yet to be called. Republicans have won 211 of the 218 seats needed to retake their House majority. Democrats have won 199 seats. In one closely watched race, Long Island Democrat Laura Gillen has defeated incumbent Republican Congressmember, former police detective Anthony Desposito, who represents New York's 4th District. Republicans are poised to expand their Senate majority in Pennsylvania. Several news outlets have projected Republican Dave McCormick will defeat incumbent Democratic Senator Bob Casey. However, Casey's refused to concede, and the very close race could be headed to a recount. In Arizona's Senate race, with three-quarters of ballots counted, Democrat Ruben Gallego holds a 1.7 percentage point lead over Republican challenger Carrie Lake, the far-right election denier and Trump ally. Trump's allies are celebrating Tuesday's victory with calls to implement the far-right policy plan to overhaul the federal government, known as Project 2025. Former White House advisor Steve Bannon Wednesday amplified a message by the far-right podcast host Matt Walsh, who tweeted, quote, "Now that the election is over, I think we can finally say that, yeah, actually Project 2025 is the agenda, LOL." A federal judge on Thursday struck down a Biden administration policy that would grant undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens a pathway to U.S. citizenship without having to leave the United States. Trump-appointed Judge J. Campbell Barker sided with Texas and over a dozen other Republican-led states, declaring the program illegal. The Keeping Families Together program was expected to benefit some 500,000 mixed-status families. Even if Biden's Justice Department appeals the ruling, the case is likely to stretch into the incoming anti-immigrant Trump administration. On Thursday, Trump told NBC there's no price tag on his plans to launch mass deportations as soon as he comes into office. The American Immigration Council estimates such a plan would cost nearly $1 trillion over 10 years. Here in New York, hundreds of immigrant justice advocates and their allies gathered in Lower Manhattan Thursday evening and vowed to protect immigrant New Yorkers and fight against the incoming administration. This is community organizer Jorge Paz Reyes.
Donald Trump has and will continue to vilify our stories, to portray us as unworthy, and his deportation agenda seeks to divide and just create chaos within our communities. That is why we need to stand united and declare that immigrants are not the problem. We are the solution.
Yeah! Israel continues to bomb the Gaza Strip, with reports of nearly two dozen Palestinians killed since dawn. This follows an Israeli attack Thursday in a school-turned-shelter in Gaza City's Shati refugee camp that killed at least 12 Palestinians and wounded 30 others. Survivors said the bombing came without warning.
We were baking bread, and our children were sitting around us, and we were at the bottom, and we saw nobody, and the floor shook. The bomb hit, and all the tents were destroyed. People ran. Some people were martyred on the floor. Rubble fell on us, and people were torn to pieces. Where is the humanity? Where is the rest of the world? Where is the mercy? We have never seen any nation waging war on children. I am 65 years old, and I've never seen any nation waging war on children.
For the last 7 weeks, Israel has allowed almost no food or aid into northern Gaza, as the UN's repeatedly warned the entire northern population is, quote, at imminent risk of dying, unquote. Meanwhile, the United Nations Human Rights Office reports nearly 70% of the more than 43,000 Palestinians killed by Israel over the last 13 months are women and children. That number is expected to be an undercount. On Thursday, Israel's military said it had secured 25 next-generation F-15 fighter jets from Boeing. The $5.2 billion deal is part of a larger U.S. funding package to Israel approved by Congress and provided by the Biden-Harris administration. Many Gaza residents fear Donald Trump's election won't bring an end to the flow of weapons that have laid waste to much of Gaza.
Biden sent a lot of weapons, rockets, bombs, you know. Those, you know, weapons helped the Israeli occupation do their disgraceful acts to the Palestinian people and the Gazans especially.
Spain has denied harbor to two ships operated by the Danish company Maersk, which were believed to be carrying weapons to Israel. El País reports the ship set sail from New York. On Thursday, Turkey's ambassador to the United Nations, Ahmet Yildiz, renewed demands for a global arms embargo on Israel as he addressed UN reporters. Turkey and another 50 nations recently sent a joint letter to the United Nations pressing for an end to Israeli arms transfers.
We cannot stress enough that the staggering civilian toll, predominantly affecting women and children, resulting from ongoing breaches of international humanitarian and human rights law is both unacceptable and intolerable.
Two Canadian Palestinian citizens are suing the government of Canada for violating its duty to prevent genocide. This is attorney Shane Martinez.
Our claim alleges that Canada, by failing to fulfill its legal duty to take all reasonable measures to prevent the crime of genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza, did causally contribute to violations of our clients' rights under the charter.
The plaintiffs in the case have lost family members to Israel's assault on Gaza, which they argue Canada has illegally abetted. Activists in New York have joined a global hunger strike movement to end the war on Gaza. They're holding vigils outside the UN headquarters today and over the weekend to call attention to Israel's catastrophic 13-month-long assault. Dozens of activists in Amman, Jordan, launched their hunger strike a week ago. This is Mohammed Al-Tabasi.
We had the idea in response to international calls to pressure through a global hunger strike in order to break the siege on northern Gaza. From there, no one has anything more precious than his health. So we decided to use our health as a form of pressure. Hunger strike, as we all know, is a form of pressure and peaceful resistance to achieve a certain demand.
Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with the head of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, who's just come out of Gaza. He'll speak to us from Amman, Jordan. Israel's military is continuing deadly attacks on southern Lebanon, including an airstrike on Sidon that killed three civilians while wounding five United Nations peacekeepers. A separate strike Thursday in the eastern Baqa Valley destroyed the historic Al-Manshiya building, an Ottoman-era structure just yards away from the Roman temples of Baalbek, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Israeli attacks on Lebanon have killed over 3,100 people. In climate news, a new UN report finds financing from wealthy nations to help poor countries adapt to the climate crisis totaled $28 billion in 2022, far short of the $359 billion that's needed. The report was released ahead of next week's UN climate summit in Azerbaijan, where financing is set to be a key issue. This is UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Climate catastrophe is hampering health, widening inequalities, harming sustainable development, and rocking the foundations of peace. The vulnerable are hardest hit, and taxpayers are footing the bill. While the purveyors of all this destruction, particularly the fossil fuel industry, reap massive profits and subsidies. Meanwhile, the gap between the funds needed for adaptation and the funds available to developing countries is set to reach up to $359 billion a year by 2030.
Democracy Now! Will be in Baku, Azerbaijan, to cover the UN Climate Summit. Tune in. In Bolivia, wildfires have ravaged 75,000 acres of the Medidi National Park. Half of that is pampas or wetland savannas. The park is home to over 1,200 bird species, 270 types of mammals, hundreds of species of fish, amphibians and reptiles. This is a park ranger.
We have a joya natural, no?
We protect a natural gem, both in biodiversity and landscape and culture. That is why Medidi Park is considered as one of the world's 10 most biodiverse parks in the world. The place that is burning is very important because it is the second place with the largest population of jaguars in South America.
A wildfire is also raging in Southern California. In Mozambique, police fired tear gas and rubber bullets at protesters Thursday, killing an estimated five people and injuring 120 others amidst ongoing post-election turmoil. The long-ruling Frelimo party declared victory last month, triggering protests and accusations of a rigged election by the opposition leader, Venancio Mondlane, and his supporters. At least 24 people have been killed in unrest, according to a local rights group. This is a resident of Maputo.
I think the situation is terrible. For better or for worse, what is happening is harming the population. We are the ones who are suffering. I think the parties should sit down and talk for the good of the population, because it is the population that is suffering.
And Australia may soon become the first country to ban social media use for children under 16 years old. The ban could take effect in roughly a year's time if the government's proposal is approved by the Australian Parliament. This is Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
Social media is doing social harm to our young Australians, and I am calling time on it. The safety and mental health of our young people has to be a priority, and my government will do all that we can to protect our young Australians, but also to provide support for parents and teachers who are dealing with these issues.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Donald Trump and his allies celebrated his election victory with calls to implement the far-right policy plan to overhaul the federal government, known as Project 2025, as Republicans also took the Senate and will probably take the House. Meanwhile, at the White House, President Biden Thursday said he'd called President-elect Trump to congratulate him and promised a peaceful transition of power.
The struggle for the soul of America since our very founding has always been an ongoing debate and still vital today. I know for some people, it's a time for victory, to state the obvious. For others, it's a time of loss. Campaigns are contests of competing visions. The country chooses one or the other. We accept the choice the country made. I've said many times, you can't love your country only when you win. You can't love your neighbor only when you agree. Something that I hope we can do, no matter who you voted for, is see each other not as adversaries, but as fellow Americans. Bring down the temperature. I also hope we can lay to rest the question about the integrity of the American electoral system. It is honest, it is fair, and it is transparent. And it can be trusted, win or lose.
President Biden spoke in the Rose Garden a day after Vice President Kamala Harris conceded her loss in a speech at her alma mater, Howard University.
While I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign.
We begin our look at where Democrats went wrong with Bishop William Barber, national co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, which sought to increase voting among low-income residents, an often ignored but massive bloc. He's a senior lecturer, repairers of the breach, and founding director of the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School, co-author of the new book, White Poverty, How Exposing Myths About Race and Class Can Reconstruct American Democracy. Bishop Barber, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about what you think happened in this election. Respond to Trump's presidency and where you think the Democrats went wrong.
Well, thank you, Amy, for getting up this morning and continuing to say Democracy Now. You know, we've got a lot of questions that we must wrestle with deeply. We can't be flippant or knee-jerk in this moment. We have to deal with the fact that America has often chosen wrong and had to pay for it later. We have to look at the fact that this week, 71 million, 72 million people chose to return Donald Trump to the White House, despite his vitriol, his anger, his regressiveness, his outright racism and lean toward fascism. And we may not know exactly what he's going to do, and it may take him doing it to the point that even his followers are hurting so bad that they admit, they ask the question, what did we do? But Nikona Hannah-Jones said something the other day, and I shared it with my co-chair, Liz Steele Harris, and she reminded us that 60 years after America's first attempt at Reconstruction in the 1920s, right after the election of 1866 in that area, the majority of Americans went back and embraced white supremacy. And if we think about where we are, we're 60 years now after the 60s, after the white Southern strategy. And what did we see the other day? We've got to ask a deep question. We saw most Americans, many Americans, did not vote. Trump got 2 million, almost 3 million votes less than he did in 2020. Harris received almost 13, 14 million votes less than her and Biden received in 2020. They got 81 million votes. A lot of people just didn't vote. And what's the reason? We know that in 2020, when Harris and Biden and Harris focused on living wages and voting rights out front, that they got 56% of the votes of those that make less than $50,000 a year in a family of four. But this year, the exit polls show that it was even 49-49. Trump came up, Democrats went down. And the question becomes, why? Did we adequately focus on the 30 million poor, low-wage, infrequent voters that held the key to the largest swing vote in the country. We reached out to more than 12 million of those persons. We've got some serious questions to wrestle with. Did white women, for instance, who are against taking abortion rights, then but also voted for Trump and chose Trump with Harris on the abortion issue, but not for presidency? Where did Hispanic men turn out? We have a lot of wrestling to do. Why is it that the issues that the most of the public agrees with, health care, living wages, voting rights, democracy, why is it that those issues weren't more upfront? And why is it that persons will choose to vote for someone who's diametrically against the very things that the percentage of the people say that they're for? We have some serious issues. What we don't now have the option to do is to give up. You know, I do think there was some failure also in the media. You know, I didn't see one debate where there was a focus on poverty and low wage. Even though 800 people are dying a day from poverty, even though you have millions, over 32 million people making less than a living wage, we haven't raised the minimum wage since 2009, not one major debate. We didn't hear about it in the Congress. Why didn't the Democrats, for instance, bring up living wage in the Senate before the election and force a vote on it to expose where the Republican Party actually stood on this critical issue? Because everywhere that raising the minimum wage and paid family leaves and things that matter was on the ballot, they won. They won in Nebraska, Missouri, and Alaska and places like that. We have some serious questions to ask. But we also, lastly, Amy, I have to also say something. Somebody said Trump has a mandate. Nobody has a mandate to overturn the Constitution. Nobody has a mandate to engage something like Project 2025 to try to take us backwards and undo progress. Nobody has a mandate to say we're not going to address people who are literally dying from the ravages of poverty. Nobody has a mandate to say we're going to take away people's health care. We have to get up every morning from now until and steal with every nonviolent tool in our disposal and challenge any form of regression, regardless of who is in office. And I thought about this when Plessy versus Ferguson came down in 1896. The activist that chose against separate but equal fought 58 years until they overturned it. They got up and they continued the battle. And so we get up this morning, we got to go back to the same kind of strength that people had when they woke up in 1877 and there was an election to turn back America, or when 1896 happened, Plessy versus Ferguson, or 1914 when a white supremacist entered the White House, played Birth of a Nation in his Oval Office, in 1955 when they woke up and Emmett Till was killed, in 1963 when four girls were killed in a Birmingham church, 1963 when a president was assassinated, 1968 when Martin King was assassinated. People had to own their tears, own their pain, own their frustration, but then still get back up and declare that we will still fight for this democracy and will not just go away and slink away into the dark.
So I wanted to go to Independent Senator Bernie Sanders tweeting, "It should come as no great surprise that a Democratic Party which has abandoned working class people would find that the working class has abandoned them. While the Democratic leadership defends the status quo, the American people are angry and want change, and they're right." Well, the DNC chair, Jamie Harrison, called Sanders' statement straight up BS. He said, "Biden was the most pro-worker president of my lifetime." And then there was also the comment of David Brooke, who is the well-known columnist in the paper. And I wanted to go to that column. He wrote in a piece headlined, "Voters to Elites." This is the New York Times opinion columnist David Brooks. "Do you see me now?" He said, "I'm a moderate. I like it when Democratic candidates run to the center, but I have to confess Harris did that pretty effectively and it didn't work. Maybe the Democrats have to embrace a Bernie Sanders style disruption, something that will make people like me, David Brooks wrote, feel uncomfortable. So if you can respond to that and give us the facts on the number of people we're talking about in this country. And of course, it's not just about numbers. It's about what people are dealing with, millions of people all over this country, and they could vote.
Right. And Amy, what we've got to do is get out of our feelings. It's a total different thing to say our policies were such and such and such, and we help people. And whether or not that was articulated, and whether or not people got it. For instance, we know that, yes, we need tax credits, child tax credit, and we support that. And, yes, we need health care. Money for housing, new housing. We're clear about that. We support that. But to say, wait a minute, we have to take a look. Where we were and what's going on, is it the messaging? What is it? Because what we know is in every around this country, raising, for instance, the minimum wage, that would affect 32 million people who live every day for less than living wage. For instance, yes, we need to deal with price gouging, but people also need money to buy goods, buy gas, buy whatever. And we've not raised the minimum wage, Democrats or Republicans. We've sat on this issue now for 15 years. We're talking about 140 million poor and low-wage people. We're talking about 43% of our country that's poor and or low wealth. We're talking about adult population, people who make less, who are $500 away from economic ruin. We're talking about 800 people that die per day. This is not hyperbole. And we have to be able to talk about this. And to talk about it is not to say that a candidate was wrong. It is to evaluate what is going on and what is going to be our position. And why, for instance, that we did not make a determined effort right up front that every time we opened our mouths, we said, listen, if you elect Democrats from the presidency to the Congress, in the first 50 days, first 100 days, we're going to raise the minimum wage to at least $15 or a little bit more. We have the data. Three Nobel Peace Prize economists won the Nobel Peace, proving that raising the minimum wage would not hurt jobs, would not force more taxes, and would not make prices rise. At some point, we have to take this very seriously. And, you know, I know people, everybody's in their emotions and should be. Now, that's not the only issue, though, and I would agree with Jamie in this. That's not the only issue. There's a lot of issues. That's why we have to drill down in this. What factor did race play? What factor did sexuality play and gender play? But we have to take serious the fundamental issues. Even in Mississippi, 66% of Republicans now say that they want health care, that they support the Affordable Care, or what we used to call Obamacare. We have to take seriously when we look at these other states. When living wages was on the ballot, it won. You know, do we need to then make sure that across the country we have these things on the ballot? But what we can't do is walk away from them. So we have to do introspection. We have to look at why there was less voting. We have to look at why when, and I remember in 2020 when Biden and Harris, when they were running, every time they talked, they said, if you elect us, we're going to do living wages and health care and voting rights. 56% of those who make less than $50,000 a year supported that ticket. We have to own the fact that some of this is not the Biden or Harris or anybody's fault. It started when the Democrats brought up for a vote and to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and 8 Democrats joined every Republican and blocked it in the United States Senate after it passed the House. That we can't have Democrats running rogue when they have power and voting against something at that time would have impacted 55 million people And it would still be at 55 million if Biden had not, and Harris had not increased the minimum wage for federal workers. But you run rogue when you have power, and then when you come back to the people for election, you say, we're with you. People are hurting out here. People are dying out here. And